Hello, my friends. Welcome into this week's episode of Forte Catholic. I'm so glad that you are here. Father Anthony and I just recorded this show yesterday as it's releasing very close to our release day. We never really do this. So we get to talk about something that happened this week, that old eclipse that happened. If you've been around for a while, you know that Father Anthony has strong thoughts about the moon. So he goes absolutely ballistic in today's episode, which is very fun for me. I hope that it is fun for you. We also talk about the gifts and the fruits of the Holy Spirit. And I think that you lose one of them quicker than you lose the other. That was one of my newer insights into my old spiritual life. And we also talk about both of us being idiots. So we hope that you enjoy this episode. If you do, please subscribe wherever you are watching or listening. Share this with a friend. Be loving and kind to us today. We hope to be loving and kind to you. Enjoy. Bye-bye. Welcome to Forte Catholic. I am Taylor Schroll, and that is Father Anthony Scaramucci Sciarrapa. Hey, buddy.
Hi, friend.
I had once again forgotten that Anthony Scaramucci is a real person.
Yeah, and like not a good person, I think.
Yeah. We have definitely talked about this before, but yeah. I don't know, for whatever reason, we were setting this up, and I Googled, and I was like, why? Where did this come from? Why do I do this? I had to Google, why am I the way that I am? But you are not Scaramucci. You are Sciarrapa, no. But we have some fun around here. So,
yes.
Can I get a gripe off my chest right when we start here?
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's a gripe for people who absolutely aren't here, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
They won't hear it. It's the amount of people who come up to me in person and are like, hey, I love that Father Anthony Sciarrapa, or hey, I love that Ryan O'Hara, who was our guest co-host last week, or I love Allison. I haven't gotten around to listening to the podcast yet. Or people who are like, love those clips, just love those clips that get thousands of views on Instagram and YouTube and Twitter. They'll get thousands of views or four. There's no in between. They'll be like, we love what you're doing. Haven't listened to the show yet, though. What are we doing? What are we doing? I'm really good at promoting the show well that people don't listen to it.
Yes. They love the promotion, though. Just keep that promotion coming.
I don't know, man. I'm genuinely thinking about just like stopping posting about the show forever to see if people listen. Because I don't know if my marketing is detrimental at this point. That's what it feels like. I don't know. Anyway. Gripe off my chest. Where I would like to start is you and I. You've been so busy, I mean, especially with the Easter season and Holy Week. That's kind of y'all's busy time.
Yeah.
But the last time I spoke to you was the last time we were on the show. So this probably isn't the best place to start the show for listeners, but it's where I need to start. I need to know two or three things in your life that are going well. And two or three things in your life that are not going well. I have some too. I started it off. Thing in my life that's not going well is apparently I make a good podcast that no one wants to listen to. Apparently that's what's going on. So what about you? You can go whatever, I don't know if you want to start with the darkness, start with the light. What's going well in your life? What's not going well, priest?
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll probably talk about this more, but Holy Week was a great success. All liturgies were great.
Great success.
It really was. Everything was great. My foot is not broken. Last night I was at the gym and I was pulling, I don't know how I did it, but I think I was pulling off a plate, and then there was a smaller 10-pound plate in front of it. Somehow a 10-pound plate fell on my foot, and I swore in public like I haven't since I was in high school, and was afraid it was broken, but just got checked out just before this show, and it's not broken, which is great. It's just like a relief that like I'm going to be okay, don't need to get a stupid cast. So that's just a huge relief off my chest. Another thing that's going really well is...
So wait. The thing that's going well is that you're not broken. The thing that's going bad is you're an idiot.
That's kind of like par for the course, though. It's not like, it's like I'm breathing, I'm existing, and I'm an idiot. That's not big deal. The other thing that's great is professional wrestling is great, Taylor. We just finished WrestleMania weekend, and it was... the best wrestling I've ever seen. It's just so good. It's a new era. I laughed. I cried. I said, oh my goodness, so many times. It was so much fun watching it. I watched the first night with my brother, Nick, and then the second night I watched at the rectory because I couldn't make it over there. And amazing. It's just amazing. Amazing, amazing show. So all that's been going really well. What's not been going well is that...
Hold on. I want to talk about wrestling for a second.
Oh,
so
yeah, please, yeah.
We had... I'm confused. And we talked... last time we talked wrestling, I told you, you made a fan out of me. I feel like Mulan. Somehow you made a fan out of me, you know? But here's my... I haven't watched yet. I had something spoiled for me. I haven't watched yet. I plan to watch it on replay with the whole family, like we talked about last time. We do plan to watch it all. But we had our big St. Joseph's fundraiser on Saturday night, like for the schools, the one time a year that they do a fundraiser. They do a really good job. A great night. So we were there that night, so we didn't watch it. And what was funny is... you and I were trying to plan when we were going to record the show. Typically, we record the week before, but you know, you're a priest and people died, so they typically need priests when that happens. So yeah. You know, funerals got scheduled over my podcast, which I guess is fine. I guess I'll be okay with that. You know, I guess they can take precedence. That's okay. But you know, so in a weird way, we typically record in like a Thursday afternoon or Wednesday morning or whatever. But we were like, hey, we got to make this work. Can we do Saturday? And you were like, I can do Saturday evening. I'm like, no, you can't. Like, I can't. You can't. You'll be watching WrestleMania, you know? But here's... I thought it was fine. And I thought I missed WrestleMania. We were going to plan to watch it the next day. And then we got busy with church stuff. But then there was another WrestleMania. I'm very confused. Yeah. Why were there two WrestleManias?
It started like 3-4 years ago. I'm not sure exactly when, but they split it up into two nights because WrestleMania got to like an 8-hour long show and it's just too much, you know? So now they split it up into two nights. So night one was good, solid, liked it. But night two was just amazing. Amazing. I couldn't believe it. Just the stories, the matches, the everything, shenanigans, plenty of shenanigans. I won't spoil anything for you, but like night two was just the best night of professional wrestling I have ever seen. It was amazing.
I like that we have some synergy here that essentially WrestleMania, you love this thing about WrestleMania. And what they did was they copied the Catholic Church from the week before. The Catholic Church was like, hey, let's have one mass over the course of 3 days. We'll call it 3 days, right? True to them, right? They'll have one mass Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But we'll spread it out because it's just too long. One of them will be 3 hours long, just like one of the WrestleMania nights was. I love that it worked for you in both senses.
You know, the funny thing is WrestleMania often falls around Holy Week or Easter around that time. And I have compared WrestleMania weekend to the Easter Triduum in homilies before. I have done that. So it's not surprising that you made a connection as well. Then this year, I've gotten more serious as I've grown as a priest. But my first couple of years, I did preach about WrestleMania on like Palm Sunday. There you go.
And then a week later, you got asked to transfer parishes. So
I think that's what happened. I think that's exactly what happened.
Okay, I interrupted you because I'm interested in your life, not because I'm a jerk. Okay, you were going to continue with other things that are going well in your life.
This is now time for bad things. It's been so busy. It's been so busy after Easter. You would like it to be not busy, but it's been busy. And it's one of these weird, sad things that people wait until after holidays oftentimes to die. So we had a lot of funerals last week. We've got like 4 more this week. So that's just crazy. I've been sick also on and off. I was sick for like the week before Holy Week and then during Holy Week. And I still can't shake this throat thing. So that's been super annoying. And then finally, speaking of my physical problems, I messed up my back in like November and it's still bothering me. But
did you drop a plate on it?
Yeah, I should drop a plate on it. Yeah, I'm going to a chiropractor. It's helped a little bit. But the funny thing is, you know, your parishioners are always looking at you. And apparently I have this parishioner who is a physical therapist who has been noticing that there's something wrong with my hips. I mean, I don't think people should look at a priest's hips, but, you know, she's a physical therapist and she's aware of, you know. Yeah. And so, like, her brother, like, said, hey, is there something, you know, wrong? I'm like, yeah, there is. So I'm actually going to give this person a call and maybe start some physical therapy for that. But I was like, oh, people are looking out for me, which is nice.
Isn't it terrible when people just look at you and they're like, there's something wrong with that guy? you don't even have to talk. I've had the same thing. There's a guy in my life. I can't remember if you've met him. I don't think you have. But there's a guy in my life who's the same thing. He does physical therapy work. And he'll look at me and be like, this hurts, doesn't it? I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it does. I'm broken. I was trying to hide it.
What I thought you were going to say, like when you have your hips and then your shoulders messed up, your back's messed up, I thought she was going to notice because, like, when you do the epiclesis, like, one shoulder is just way above the other one.
It might be. It might be. I don't know. But apparently, just even just the short walks I take during mass, like, yeah, you're broken. It's like, yes, I am.
That's the theme. Well, it was you're not broken and an idiot, but now you both.
Yes, I am.
Okay, we'll let you take a break. I'll do one that's a Holy Week themed, something that went really well and something that didn't go very well. But even the thing that went well was also kind of a thing that didn't go well, which is confusing. But I think that it has to do with Good Friday, which I think fits the theme of, like, it's good, but also real sad. that's kind of where I'm at. So the good thing / bad thing, the very Good Friday thing that happened on Good Friday, is every year that we do the, you know, on Good Friday and Palm Sunday, we read the entire Passion narrative, right? So I heard it twice last week, right? The Passion narrative, so Palm Sunday and Good Friday. And every year, I'm not holy enough to have something stick out to me specifically twice in 1 week. I'm just not there yet. But every year on either Palm Sunday or Good Friday, I attend both, but either time, one thing sticks out to me. And this year it was on Good Friday. So I went to Palm Sunday and nothing stuck out to me. It was just a normal day. So I'm like, ooh, Friday's going to be good, you know? So listening to the Passion narrative. And the thing that hit me that, you know, again, I've heard 1,000 times because we've all heard the Passion narrative 1,000 times. When the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, Sadducees, those guys, whenever they're talking to Pilate, he's like, do you want me to crucify your king?
Yeah.
And when they say, we have no king but Caesar, like every dagger in the entire world stabbed me in the heart. I'm like, man, just from there, like how far they've fallen, dude. These religious leaders / religious people. So like I'm including myself in this. I'm not a priest. I'm not a religious leader, but like I'm a leader in a religious space, right? And I was just like, how far they had fallen and didn't realize it. Like they're staring God in the face and they're not talking to him. They're talking to the government, right? They're like, whatever. God, whatever, right? They're talking to the government and they're like, you know, we don't have any king but Caesar. And just how far they've fallen, because like we hear on all the Jewish history, their whole deal was like, let's not get conquered so that our only king can be the Lord, right?
Yeah.
And then they literally fought wars to make that true. And then they finally lost, you know, everything happens, right? And now they've come so far to the point where they're like, yeah, Caesar! Woo! With God standing right there. And it just stabbed me in the heart because I'm like, It's a theme I've thought about before, but not in this particular way, I guess, where it was just like, it's not that, because we talk about priorities all the time and how I can put work as a priority over God, or that I can put sports or watching TV or video games or family time, or whatever. I can put all these other things in front of God, but I really could only ever have one king. There can't be two. I mean, there could be two popes every now and then, but there can't be two kings, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, the amount of times that I essentially say, I have no king but work. Yeah. I have no king but X, Y, and Z. When Jesus is standing right there, it ripped me to shreds. And I'm like, thank you, Jesus, I guess. You know, like, I don't know.
It got me. No, that's really good. Yeah, there's layers to that. Yeah, you know, it's funny because like you said, as you were, you know, half joking, crying, saying thank you, Jesus, you know, it's that's how, you know, like when Jesus like either rebukes or points out something that's wrong in your heart, it never makes us like depressed. Like there's a sorrow there, but it's not like there's something, like we know there's something very good happening. And that's always a good sign that's coming from the Lord. So yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was real good. My bad thing was also from Good Friday, and I texted you about this.
Yes, you did.
And you told me that you gave me the correct answer, and it's only made me more entrenched in my problem.
Yes.
So, Good Friday. A little bit of backstory. Typically, our Easter, not Holy Week, but our Easter and our Christmas masses are at our chapel, which I think I've talked to you about this. I don't know if I've shared about it at the church or on the podcast. So our church is a typical 1950s, 1960s Catholic church. It's pretty. It has saint statues. It's, you know, looks like the Ark from the inside. Like, it's a pretty church. Like, traditional people would probably like it, other than the fact that we face towards the people, not towards the wall. But, like, you know, we could be, right? Like
sure.
Traditional people would like it. Our chapel, traditional people would hate. I've talked about it sparingly here on the show before, where the Catholic church, my church, that also runs a school, bought a school building from the Baptists who were leaving to upgrade their church and school. Mm-hmm. So we bought their school, and that also came with a Protestant megachurch. So okay. It seats 2,500 people. It looks, you know, it has two floors like a Protestant megachurch. It has screens and, you know, good projectors and good sound and good lighting like a Protestant church does, not like a Catholic church does, right?
Yeah.
Well, in our main church, a beam of wood from Noah's Ark on the top of the ceiling on Tuesday or Wednesday of Holy Week, it fell while no one was there. No one was hurt. It fell from the ceiling and crushed a couple of pews, like real bad. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We have completely moved to our chapel, which is funny because you have a chapel at your church and it's like a 12 by 12 room where your church is massive, right?
Right.
Ours is the opposite. Our church seats about, I don't know, eight or 900. Our chapel seats 2,500. So that's we nice. Had all of our Holy Week stuff. So this bad thing happened, right?
Yeah.
The roof falling from the church, a bad thing, right? Hitting a pew, bad thing. Not no one dying, great thing. But because of that, we're out of our church from Holy Week until like they could get it fixed and make sure everything else is good. It's like we're in the chapel for the next few weeks, if not a couple of months, right? Just for safety's sake, right? So that meant all of Holy Week was now in the chapel, which in a strange way, I think brought more people to Holy Week services.
Hmm.
Because there was room, and it wasn't going to be standing room only, and it was going to be, like, you were going to have room to be a part of it, right? So I've always been to Good Friday services, services on Good Friday, right?
Sure, yeah.
I've always been to those with a normal-sized packed church, 800, 900, 1,000 people in all the churches I've been through over the years. Well, now Good Friday was in the megachurch. Yeah. So we had, I don't know, 1,500 people, I would guess, 1,750 at Good Friday. Yeah. Which is a great thing. That's not my great. My good thing is that, you know, God took this bad thing that happened in his own house and made it a good thing. Like, double the amount of people got to go to Good Friday service. Beautiful, right? The bad thing was I was also there with them. So I was one of 1,750 people. Yeah. So when it came to the veneration of the cross, one cross in the middle of the altar, you know, at the bottom of the steps of the altar, one cross, 1,750 people. How long do you think that took, priest?
Forever.
Yeah, like 40 minutes, like a good 40 minutes. So, you know, Good Friday, I talked about a couple weeks ago on the show before. Good Friday might be my favorite day of the year because of the weird tension between thank you, Jesus, that sort of thing, right? It might be my favorite day of the year. And it was until about 15 to 20 minutes into the veneration. And I'm like, all right. I turn off my praying hat and I put on my Catholic logistics. I've been in ministry for too long hat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Because I'll fast forward. I was frustrated for about the last 20 minutes. And I'm glad those other 1,750 people got the chance to venerate the cross. Beautiful. That's not the part I'm complaining about. Yeah. The part I'm complaining about is about 15 minutes later, we all got to go in lines once again to receive our consecrated Lord, who was consecrated on Thursday evening. So the good news was we didn't have to do the whole Eucharistic prayer. I wish it was like that every week, that the priest would just handle it, and then we could just show up and receive
just Jesus. Pre-made Jesus. Yeah. Just warm him back up.
Oh, boy. I'm gonna stop. But it didn't really... I was a little frustrated and taken out of the prayer experience, but I was mad once we got to the Eucharist. Because we got to the Eucharist, and how long do you think it took 1,750 people to go to go receive our consecrated Lord? I'm not even going to let you guess, because it's ridiculous. 8 minutes! 8 minutes! 1,750 people received the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ in 8 minutes. So, cross...
Yeah.
That we venerate is a symbol of the real cross, and it took 40 minutes. Yes. The Eucharist, not a symbol, the real thing, Jesus, can be split into 750 pieces, and we can all receive him fully and wholly. That took 8 minutes. The fake representation took 45. What are we doing? Why can there only be one symbol, but there could be 1750 of the real thing?
This was a thing like a few years ago. Like the church cracked down on having multiple crosses, because like growing up, I had multiple crosses and stuff.
Really?
And
like, see, I don't remember having multiple. I just remember being in smaller groups.
Yeah. No, but it was a thing. So I remember I was a priest. I think I was a priest. And my, or maybe a seminarian. I don't know how long ago this was, but I remember like my pastor like complaining about the fact that like, oh, we have to use just one cross. His solution to the problem was he got this gigantic cross and kind of laid it across our stairs. It was like 12 foot by, it was just a huge thing. So you just had crowds of people coming to it. Right. The problem with that is then like,
it's like an altar rail at that point.
Exactly. It's just giant thing. So you have a bunch of people go. But the problem with that is that it's actually supposed to be a crucifix. So we can't use that anymore.
You didn't want to have a 1,200 pound Jesus.
Yeah, you
cross.
Couldn't. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. So at my parish, you know, it was definitely a smaller crowd. The church was pretty full, but yeah, it took forever, you know, just because people were basically going to come up two by two at this crucifix we had. And it's just how it is. It's how it is. There's only supposed to be one cross. The idea is it's the one cross, you know.
There's only one Jesus too, and we split him up, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, those are different things. I get it. You know, don't worry. I get it. But it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, I don't know. It's the rules.
my argument is it shouldn't be the rules because it's ridiculous. Like, I understand the theology, my guys.
Yes.
We can make the, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense that like the thing that we actually venerate, capital V, the thing that we worship and adore like veneration, adoration, worship, all Jesus. Solely veneration? There can only be one! I don't understand. It's ridiculous to me.
I mean, there's definitely some like, on paper, it's beautiful because, you know, everyone is venerating the one cross, right? We're going to this one cross, remembering that it was on this one cross that Christ saved us. But yeah, when you get a church that big, it's rough. I'm not going to lie. It's a rough one.
Very, very silly.
And then I don't know about you, but like sometimes like you get angry at older people. It's like, move faster. Stop being so pious. Yeah. Give it a smooch and move on. And like, oh no, this is not.
That's
good.
How I feel about you moving around mass currently. Hurry up, little hitman. All right. Anything else going swimmingly well or swimmingly bad? Like you're drowning in your life?
No. It's not bad. I mean, we're going to start wedding season. That's the big thing. Wedding season has begun. Got to make sure all my paperwork's in check. And I'm going to start doing a lot of weddings. But that's summer. That's what happens.
All right. I'm going to make it not about you now. And we're going to do the same thing, but about our parishes. So we'll just do the good ones since you work there. What is one thing that I'll answer first because I'm springing this on you. What is one thing that your parish is doing really well right now? And it can't be something basic that every church does, like, oh, the readings. No, not like that. What is something special that your parish is doing really well right now? I'll answer first. To kind of finish up Easter, the last day of Easter, Divine Mercy Sunday, we went and had our mass at the big chapel, and then we went over to the PAC, which is at the other location, for like a parish potluck and Easter egg hunt, and we prayed a Divine Mercy chaplet. And like, man, one, just seeing how like well our parish is supporting young families, because this is a young family event, because it's an Easter egg hunt for all the kids, right? But like doing anything that you could ask well. Like we're doing the parish, like we're doing the potluck, which means like fellowship and eating. Right. We did that part well. And then we did the fun stuff for the kids, which is just cool to see kids doing well. But then there was also snuck in, which usually I don't like when things are snuck in, especially when it comes to prayer. Don't spring this on me. Tell me we're going to be doing this. I want to be prepared. But right around the time we were done eating, we prayed a Divine Mercy chaplet with that same group of people. So there are, you know, all these parents and a bunch of little kids. And what the DRE at the parish did was he went around and he had kids, like some of the older kids, but not old, like 8 to 12-year-olds lead, you know, the 5 decades of the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And it was beautiful, man. It was just so cool to see, like, everyone was running around going crazy. And then everyone, including the littles, like seeing little kids pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet together. Oh, dude, just beautiful. It was a really special day. So, all right, what is your parish doing? Very well.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a lot of things that are going well in my parish, but if it's kind of unique, it's that we really do liturgy incredibly well here. You go to any of the masses we have, that it's going to be reverent, it's going to be respectful, and there's going to be a lot of people there. You know, especially Holy Week, the music was amazing. We had like an orchestra for it as well. We've got like, you know, 20 to 30 servers at all of these Holy Week things.
It's too
many. Yeah, but it's funny because we got these guys, our guy who's a MC. He's in college and he has one of those like secret service, like little earpieces so that he can talk to his other masters of ceremony and keep everyone in check. It's flawless. It's flawless, you know? And even on a Sunday, regular Sunday mass, you have a bunch of altar servers. They're excited to be there. So mass is, you never have to like worry about, is mass going to be goofy today? Or is mass, you just don't have to worry about that, you know?
Yeah, because you stopped preaching about WrestleMania.
Yeah, exactly. I've become less goofy. That and confessions all the time. I need to mention that we hear confessions all the time, and there's always lines. You know, there's like 4 or 5 different times during the week that we hear confessions, and there's always people, which is beautiful. So
that is beautiful. That is my favorite thing to hear about a parish. The second one, the previous one, you're gonna have to defend this for me. Okay. I see priests, especially priests your age, like the priest on Twitter that has backwards feet that grosses me out. He was bragging about this on his Easter masses too. There's like 40, 50 altar servers. It's too many. You need 3 or 4. What? Why? It's too many. Stop it. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay. So it's definitely a little bit more is more. So you need for Holy Thursday, you're going to need like, I think 5 to 10. If you're pulling out tables and stuff for the feet washing, a bunch
Ten's
of stuff.
Too here. Many.
But the thing is,
I'll give you five.
First of all, it means I can hold more candles, and candles are cool, and there's lots of candles. But really, really, what it means to me is that like these young people, guys and girls, like they want to do this. They get their friends to join them to do this. Like they get excited about like church things, and they want to do a good job, and they care about it, you know. And I think from the boys, we're definitely getting vocations from it. Absolutely. Like these kids ask me questions about like the breviary out of nowhere. I'm like, how do you know the breviary exists? What's wrong with you? Right. And it's actually like, or they ask me like these deep theological questions while I'm in the sacristy because they're listening.
And you're like, shut up. I'm getting ready for mass.
Exactly. They won't leave me the frick alone. So, I mean, that's really why I like it. And, you know, it makes big processions. It's nice. It's nice to see. It's like, oh, we're doing something. It's good.
You did a great job arguing for it where I guess like now I'm the jerk and I look really stupid.
Yeah.
But so I guess I'll concede and I'll say that it's fine. But the procession looks as ridiculous as I do right now. The 30 kids sitting on the altar looks exactly as ridiculous as I do right now. I guess it's worth it for priestly vocations and for them to have a good relationship with their priest. I guess it just looks real dumb.
I don't think so. I think it looks great. It looks like it's something very important is happening. We get to throw that's a big also parade what you say for Jesus.
Every time you look in the mirror at that stupid hair, I think it looks great. We can agree to disagree, I guess.
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
Big parade for Jesus. Now, you big literally 10 minutes ago said you can expect when you come to our parish that it's not ridiculous. So you're like, parade!
Everything in my brain is ridiculous. Objectively speaking, it might not be, but it's interpreted in the weirdest way in my head. So it's like, yay, Jesus parade, let's go.
Oh, very good, very good. All right, we're going to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. If you're still listening and not just listening to the clips of this, because this part won't be clipped out, because you're a jerk! Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. I got a DM this week over on the old Instagram, and somebody asked, hey, do you still have merch? I'm like, yes, I do. We bought it years ago. Haven't talked about it in many years, but I still have an entire suitcase full of these hats that I'm currently wearing. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it. Forte Catholic hats, Forte Catholic t-shirts, all kinds of stuff. You can check out everything at fortecatholic.com/store. You can get some merch for your friends. We know Christmas isn't coming up, so just be kind to somebody. Treat yourself, as our friend Aziz Ansari likes to say, or you can treat somebody else, as Jesus likes to say. So those two people are similar. ForteCatholic.com/store. Get a shirt or a hat today, and it helps feed my children. Thanks. Welcome back to Forte Catholic. I am Taylor Schroll, and that is Father Tony. Father Tony. So you'll take the Scaramucci comparison, but not Tony. It's hilarious.
Absolutely. I've never been a Tony. It's just not who I am. Scaramucci, Aunt. Maybe. You know?
I knew a really cool Hispanic guy whose name was Anthony, but we called him Ant, and it totally fit. So it doesn't fit for you.
No.
Ant. Yeah. Mm. Hey, Tony! I could see doing that. If we did our Italy trip last summer, I could have seen me doing that while we were there. That's probably why we didn't go. You didn't want to deal with that. So, so the day that we are recording this is a very special day for you and I. Very special day.
How?
There is an eclipse happening, and we all know how much you love the moon. You've been famous here on this podcast and the other podcasts you've been on, and when you used to be a Catholic priest on the internet, famous for just loving the moon. You know, so many connections with our faith, with Mary, and how it represents the Eucharist, and how it represents you know, our relationship with God. You're a big proponent of the moon. It's a big day for you.
Just to remind or inform listeners who may not know, I hate the moon. The moon needs to be destroyed. And the moon is being really uppity today. Really feeling like a big deal just because it's passing over the sun and getting all this attention. And like, how dare the moon block out the brightness of the rising sun? Like, people are like, oh, this is like, the scientific miracle of how the dimensions work perfectly. You know what? Screw you, moon. Know your place. It's daytime. I shouldn't see you. Get out of here. And then you're going to block out the day? Like, know your place, moon. It's ridiculous.
I feel like that was a perfect encapsulation of how you talk to those altar servers when they ask you a question before
Mass. Exactly. Know your place. Get out of here.
Know your place.
You're blocking out the sun, which is me.
So it's a big deal. My wife and my kids, along with most of the rest of our school community, just like didn't go to school today because they're driving like 30 to 45 minutes north of here is like the 100% blockage. Like we're in like the perfect area for where the moon completely blocks out the sun. And I think what's very funny about it to me is that our entire lives are like, don't stare at the sun. And then now for an hour, we're encouraging our children. Hey, look over there. Just very silly thing.
I was talking to my business manager this morning, and she's a crazy person. I love her. And she's like, hey, are you going to go stare at the sun? I'm like, no. He's like, but she's like, if we stare at the sun and go blind, we might not have to go into work tomorrow. That's a good excuse. I'm like, no. Sorry, I can't go into work. I've been blinded by staring into the sun.
That would be about as dumb as dropping a 10-foot plate on your foot.
That's very similar. Yeah, similar things.
So I have argued with you for this, with you about this for years now, but my favorite thing about the moon is that the whole how it interacts with the sun. So if Father Anthony is the moon, which isn't a huge stretch because you hate the moon and you might feel similar about yourself. So you are currently the moon, and your job as a Catholic priest, but also just as a Catholic person, because this can apply to anybody listening as well. Your job is to reflect the sun. S-O-N. I've been in youth ministry before.
Yes.
I saw a bunch of youth ministry references to WrestleMania, which was fun too. But you know who else finished the story?
Exactly. I love it. I love wrestling memes.
So our job is to reflect Jesus, right? We are not God, which sometimes we can think that we are making decisions for ourselves that go against what God says, essentially saying that I know better for me than God does. My favorite definition of sin these days is me choosing myself over God's plan for me. That's what sin is, right? It's like, sure. I know better. I know that this will make me happy. I know that this will bring me fulfillment. I know that this will make me have more friends, and then clearly does the exact opposite of those things, right? Mm-hmm. We're to reflect the sun, and I think that like the moon is in phases. I think that's probably how my spiritual life is. I don't know about yours, but sometimes I'm full moon and brightly shining the sun out for all to see. And other times I look like a croissant, and other times I'm invisible. So I think that's a good little metaphor for the spiritual life.
It is. You don't? It is. It's not bad. It's not bad. But I just want to focus on the second half of that. Yeah, because we've all heard that, you know, the moon reflects the sunlight and the darkness, and that's beautiful, whatever. But you know why Mary steps on the moon? You know why she's always standing on it? For that second reason, because it reflects, it's an image of the inconsistency of the sinful heart. And Mary stomps on it. She puts her feet on the moon. You know what else she puts her feet on? The serpent. And where is that? That's where the moon is, right? So it's a symbol of sin, of not being consistent in your love for Jesus Christ, and the moon should be destroyed.
That's fair enough. I also think that there's two other things that are funny to me about this. Everybody keeps saying this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing for the moon to block out the sun. And yet, I remember about somewhere between a year and 2 years ago, year and a half ago, I was leading a diocesan junior high youth rally for the Diocese of Beaumont. Like, this is a real thing that happened. And I was, you know, I gave the talk, we did some prayer, and then it was some free time. And you want to know what we did during that free time? We walked outside with those stupid glasses on that looks like we're watching a James Cameron 3D movie. We go outside, we stare at the sun because the moon was blocking it. It was a year and a half ago, and we're just pretending like it didn't happen? I don't understand.
This is, once again, the moon getting uppity, right? Right. This happens all the time. Apparently, this is a super special time, and it's only going to happen in America, you know, once and forever. But you know what else I don't like about the moon? What's the moon hiding, Taylor? Why did we only see one side of it? Why is it afraid to spin around and show us what's behind its back?
It's hiding its backside, which apparently you don't, because doctors are looking at you during mass.
You know what it's hiding behind its back? A gun. It's a gun that's using. It's going to use to blow up the Earth, and we need to get to it first before it gets to us. I guarantee you. Don't believe NASA. The dark side of the moon, giant gun that the moon's getting ready to shoot us.
We did get to it before it got to us. Have you heard of the space program?
Oh, yeah. No, I see. Some people say we didn't land on the moon. I say we landed on the moon, but we lied about what we found there. The reason why they left is that they left because there's a giant gun there that's getting ready to shoot the Earth. And they're not telling us about it because they don't want mass panic. And so they go to the moon again and again to appease the moon, to bring the moon gifts of tributes. And why are we doing it again? Because the moon's angry again. So that's why Elon Musk or whoever else is going to the moon or Mars or whatever the heck, they're going to space to appease the moon. Appeasement never works. This is what happened in the 1930s and 40s. We tried to appease Hitler, and look what happened there. What do you think is going to happen if we try to keep appeasing the moon? We need to stand up against the moon and blow it up before it's too late.
There's so much here. My favorite thing about talking about this topic with you is that it brings out the strangest version of you, and I love this. This is the Anthony Scaramucci version of you, because my favorite thing you just did. There's so many different directions we could go from what you just said.
Yeah.
But the one that's sticking in my mind is that you were like, okay, you can either believe in NASA, which 99% of people do, or that vocal 1% who says we never landed on the moon. You chose a third path that no one's ever done. You're like, the conspiracy theorists and the normies both think you're an idiot, because you're like, the moon now has arms, apparently, and is holding a gun.
I have transcended their pathetic opinions. They're both sheep. Sheep on both sides. Only I see the truth.
You're full of bullsheep. That's what you are.
I'm a voice crying out in the wilderness. And you better listen to me, because you know what happens when you don't listen to prophets? Bad stuff happens.
Okay, this I think I need a transcript of what has transpired so far, because I'm real confused.
Clip that and don't watch the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got all the good stuff in that clip.
You can stare at the sun, but you can't watch an hour podcast on YouTube. What is wrong with you guys? All right, I'm sure I had more about the moon, but I'm exhausted.
You should take off your hat. If people like staring at the sun so much, you should take off your hat and like stare at the reflection of the sun on your bald head.
Get your glasses out. The 10-second warning. Get your glasses out. Be ready to look at your YouTube screen. So, all right. Well, you called the moon uppity.
Yeah.
It's making everything dark. Oh, the last thing I wanted to talk about is just how we always like to tell old generations that they're stupid. When we're the same, like we're the same people, exactly just same. With different technology, right?
Yeah.
To where like people talk about all the time, like how all these tribes and stuff would go crazy when there was some kind of event up in the stars, like solar eclipse, lunar eclipse, you know, shooting stars, you know, all this kind of stuff was a sign from God or whatever, or a sign from, you know, I guess not God, the opposite of God or whatever.
Yeah.
And how, like, I like thinking about the things that we believe now that people in 200 years be like, they were so dumb. Like, there's so many things that we do. Like, for instance, I don't know if you've ever been to a Good Friday service, but there's only one cross. And 200 years from now, they'll look at us and be like, what were they doing?
That's just, wait, I got to say something else. This is very important about the moon thing. And everyone who says that Mary loves the moon, okay, why are we all talking about the eclipse and not about the fact that today is a feast day of the Annunciation? The moon is literally getting more attention. I saw on Twitter that there's somebody, a bishop out there, who is saying a eclipse mass. I don't know if that's just bad advertising, but how about you say a mass for the feast day of the Annunciation? How about that? The moon is stealing attention from Our Lady. Do you think she's happy about that? No, she's not. She's the one who's going to bring you to Jesus, not the moon. The moon is literally bringing Christians away from Jesus as we speak. It should be destroyed.
All right. We're going to take that under advisement, and we're going to go back to how I had set up my perfect transition about 2 minutes ago to our next
Another
topic.
Thing about the moon.
Anything else? We're already here. You might as well.
I thought you were just going to cut it there. I don't know.
Show over. Okay. All right. We'll go back to my transition that now won't work. So there's another group of people who were from a long time ago that people say we're dumb, and yet we do the same thing. Remember that transition? Everybody remember that? I just want everybody to know that I'm good at podcasting.
Not good enough to deal with me, though.
I usually am, but you're uncontrollable when it comes to the moon.
I'm all fired up.
All right. Adam and Eve's first reaction to sin was to hide. I heard this at a talk last week.
Yeah.
So their first reaction was, well, they realized that they were naked and then they hid. And the person that was giving the talk said, they tried to make this point that I thought was valid until I wrote it down and read it back. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. They didn't realize they were naked. The point he was making was that because they were only looking at each other, meaning like I'm looking outward and loving and not looking inward on myself. And it was a great point until I realized that they were both naked. Like if you're looking outward, you're going to notice that another person's naked. It's not like you're like, oh, where are my clothes? Because you looked at Eve or Eve looked at Adam. So I applaud the effort. It just didn't make sense. I wrote down the note to talk about on the show and then I deleted it. And then I ended up talking about it anyway. So, but the thing that is still true is that their first reaction to sin was to hide, which is so silly. It's just so silly. Where they're like, we're going to hide from God. And he's like, where are you? I love how God plays along.
He does.
Because God could have just poof and appeared right in front of Adam and Eve. But he didn't. He's like, where are you? Oh, Adam.
It's like me playing hide and seek with my niece. It's the same thing. Like, I know she's standing behind a pillow. It's very obvious where she's at.
She might be naked too. Who knows? So,
sometimes you gotta watch out for those little kids.
Yeah. So, you know, we all look at them and they're like, how dumb were they hiding from God in a garden? And putting leaves in front of them, which is also funny to me, like when it's just like, hey, we've been naked this whole time. Oh, no, let's hide. It's like, you've seen it. It's fine, whatever.
Yeah,
anyway.
Like, there's no surprises. I don't know.
But this is exactly what we do. Every time we sin, we go and we hide from God, right? Which is ridiculous. We think that we can run away by not logging into prayer, if we just avoid our prayer time, maybe God won't know that I sinned, or maybe I won't have to deal with not my nakedness, but my sin and my shame, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's fascinating how not only their sin and their inclination to sin is what we inherited from them, but we're the exact same. We inherited the reaction to it. We're like, our first reaction isn't to go to confession. And like, I think I've actually gotten pretty good now. I could be better, but I've gotten pretty good at like knowing I need to go to confession and getting there at least eventually, right? At least it being part of my process. But the thing I still suck at is I will sin and I'll get caught in a pattern of sin and I'll just be like, I'm not logging in. I'm not going to pray. I'm going to avoid time with God because then I have to address the fact that I sinned and I don't like that. And I'm doing the same exact thing. Now, we talked about you being an idiot earlier. I'm the idiot now. I know I'm doing it and I'm being an idiot over and over again, avoiding my prayer time because I sinned. It's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus was pretty famous for saying, you know, I would really like the sinner to kind of fix themselves before they ever talk to me again. Yeah. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for only the righteous, I think. But yeah, it's funny. We all do the same thing. You know, I'm too embarrassed to go to confession. It's like, you've already done the embarrassing thing. You're already naked. Like, it's already happened, you know? Right. But yeah, that's the biggest temptation after we've sinned. A lot of times, I think I've noticed this, you know, working with people, doing spiritual direction, sin itself, obviously bad. But I think a lot of times what really messes us up is, I know, I'm pretty insightful. Sin bad.
Mm-hmm. I love that guy. He was great in the 90s.
Yeah. So anyway, so like sin itself, not good. But I think a lot of times what messes us up is like how we react to sin after it's occurred. Where like either we spend like all of the time just beating ourselves up, not a helpful thing to do. Or avoiding prayer because we're not holy enough, not a helpful thing to do. Avoiding confession, not a helpful thing to do. And we just like put ourselves in these cages after we've sinned, where Jesus is like, I'm literally here to forgive you. You know, it's one of the things that St. Paul says that that really kind of turned my life around. And it's in Romans. I'm not going to quote it exactly. But basically, he's like, hey, Jesus died while you were all a bunch of unbaptized pagan losers, right? He died for you then. You think he's not going to forgive you now that you are his own children? Like, of course he is. Like, even more, we have more reason to hope for mercy because we're baptized, because we're Christians, because we're messed up.
I get in that cycle often. How does anybody that finds themselves in the cycle of, you know, I sin and then I stop praying and then my spiritual life gets worse, so then I sin some more, and it's just this downward spiral. Like, you've told me the theology of the encouragement, but like, what do I need to do, man? I'm lost. I've been doing this for years.
I know. It's something that we fall into. Two things. The one answer, not the greatest answer, but the one that we normally come to, is that we get so sad and depressed that eventually we hit rock bottom and then we turn back to Jesus. It's an option.
I've done that a couple times before. It's not very fun.
Not a great one. But I think it's if you just... That's why, you know, so having like a regular, like kind of disciplined prayer life is helpful. Like for me, praying the breviary is helpful because even though I don't want to pray, I'm kind of like at least reading Jesus' words, even if I'm not really into it. And it was like little cracks where he opened the door a little bit to God. He really takes advantage of those, and you it begins to turn your heart around. So kind of just like, it seems like weird advice, like just do it, just pray anyway. But that's really what it is, you know? It's like, do what you normally do. One of the best advice, I think it's in a book called Spiritual Warfare or something like that, is basically if you've sinned, you should not act like you've sinned. Act like you're holy. Do what you would do if you had never sinned. Go pray, you know? And of course, like if you commit a mortal sin, you can't receive your grace. Sure, whatever. But like, other than that, forget about your sin, act like you normally do, and go to confession. You know, it's one of those things, like, really, you have to put it behind you. There's no point in, and you bring it back up, and you bring it into the light at confession, but, like, in the meantime, just act like you would act if you were holy.
That's great advice. I think that's the best advice I've ever heard of that. I am going to pretend like I'm holy from now on. Thank you. I appreciate that. So this is an example of... I learned the theology, and learning the theology made me look at my personal life And I'm like, how do I make the theology apply to my personal life?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like, again, revisiting the theology, revisiting a priest and saying, hey, how do I fix it? Okay, good. Right. That's how things are typically supposed to go. We learn the theology. We learn what God wants. We look there, then look at our life. We correct what's wrong in our life and move forward. Right. That's how things are supposed to go. Every now and then in my life, every now and then I do the opposite, where I have so much of a truth in my lived experience that seems to contradict the theology.
Mm.
And then I have to, in a weird way, make the theology match my lived experience, which sounds wrong, right? It sounds wrong. But I'm gonna give you an example of this where what's probably actually happening is maybe a misunderstanding of the theology. But this is, it seems like a pivot, but it's pretty similar. It's about my own sinfulness and anybody listening's own sinfulness, my own sinfulness and my ability to do ministry. And here's my, I guess, issue with the most common theology about this is a book called The Soul of the Apostolate. Have you read this book?
I've perused it. It's a big one though. Anyone who does like any kind of ministry eventually comes across it. And sometimes they make it their entire personality for a while. That being said, it's a good book. It's really good. It's really good for anyone who is doing Jesus things.
I think it's a great chapter. And I think it's that chapter over and over and over and over and over again. So if you've perused it, you've read it.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the book that I have an issue with. It's kind of what you were saying, that like people in ministry make it to be everything. Where essentially the book says, if you're not holy, your ministry is going to suck and fall and falter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning, if you don't pray like you should, people will only watch your clips and never your podcast.
Yeah.
Right, right. So
that's exactly what it says.
Stuff like that. But I had this strange realization the other day, because that has almost never. It's been true sometimes where if I see my holiness slip, I see my ministry slip. That has been true an amount of times. What has been true an exorbitant amount more times than that is God working through me despite my sinfulness.
Mm-hmm.
That is the lesson that I have seen 90% of the time, where 10% of the time God hurts my ministry because I hurt my ministry. And therefore, God doesn't bless it because I'm an idiot, right? That happens 10% of the time. But that's what Soul of the Apostolate says happens 100% of the time. And I'm like, this isn't my lived experience at all. I have had so many like these call to repentance moments where I am a sinful mess and I go and give a talk and it converts hearts and they are converted to the Lord and they grow closer to the Lord. And it's a conversion moment of me where I, again, kind of like earlier, like, I'm sorry, Jesus. Like, I recognize my own sinfulness. And yeah, I'm grateful that he worked through me anyway, right? That has been my experience for years. So the Soul of the Apostolate and the Soul of Apostolate cult has always bothered me. I have a secondary thought on this that gave me this new insight, but I want to get your initial thoughts on this.
Yeah. I think you're onto something here. I think because I've experienced ebbs and flows in my spiritual life, and I am constantly doing ministry as a priest. And one thing I have noticed is if I am, you know, growing closer to the Lord, doing what I'm supposed to do, open to him, I definitely see more fruit, you know. But I've also had those moments where, like, two things I think happen. One, we do have, like, you know, gifts and talents. And I, for example, preaching is subjective, but I'm a good preacher. You know, and even if my preaching isn't, you know, super infused with the Holy Spirit because I'm too busy sinning, you know, I can still preach a really good homily that helps people. You know, that's a thing that happens. Also, one thing you have to remember is that God does what he wants.
Right.
And sometimes he's not going to let you get in the way of what he wants to do for other people. You know, he's just not going to. That being said, I think there is a limit to that. That if you keep falling into sin and you're not repenting and you're in a dark place, you know, it breaks you. You know, we can't live living that double life for very long, and eventually our ministry will fail. You know, I think long term it's true for sure.
Right.
Short term, a lot of times you can like it's not necessarily like I didn't pray my breviary today, therefore I'm going to fail at mass. You know, it's not going to happen that way. You know.
Right. I think you're the longevity point, because I think of examples, people who have been leaders in ministry for forever that get caught in scandal, and it destroys not only their life, but the life of a lot of people that they worked with, right?
Yeah.
But here was the new realization that helped me finally, like, kind of understand the nuance here. Like, I knew there were nuances that I wasn't completely getting, because the theology, especially from this, primarily coming from this book and, like, running in ministry circles, everybody talking about, if you don't pray today, your ministry's going to go under. It's like, no, it's not. Like, I have other gifts, you know, I don't know, man, right? But here's where this realization came from. I've talked about before, usually about once a semester, because once a semester I'm leading this foundations course for our parish. And at the end of it, in order to, like, send people out into ministry, we do the spiritual gifts assessment, where they take the assessments, like, where are your gifts and how can you serve them? So we talk about the gifts of the Spirit and the fruits of the Spirit. And I think for the first time, it was in a conversation I was having with somebody about the spiritual gifts inventory, this test that you take to see where, you know, how best you can fit and serve the Lord and serve the church, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a nuance that this guy brought up between the gifts and the fruits, and something just clicked in my head. So just as a review here, the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, and also, like, chastity, which is one that the catechism adds that's not in the Bible, but whatever, right? We know the fruits. Yeah. And then there's also the gifts: wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, fear of the Lord, right? So for the first time, like, this distinction was really made in a sense that it clicked for me that if my personal holiness isn't going well, if I'm not praying, if I'm avoiding prayer, like we talked about earlier, if because of my sinfulness, my fruit can leave almost immediately. That day, the next day, 2 days, 3 days, where, like, if I'm sinful and therefore avoiding praying, I'm less loving, I'm less joyful, I'm less peaceful. I'm, like, all of those words, all the fruits, I can be less of almost immediately. The gifts take longer to chisel away at.
I can be
less loving and still give a great talk. I can be less loving and still edit a great podcast that's listened to by hundreds of thousands of people. Not this one, other people's, because they don't post videos on social media, I guess, you know? but, like, I can still do the gifts for a time. And I don't know what that time is, right? Where it could still be fruit, the gifts could still be fruitful, but the fruits of the Spirit can leave my life almost immediately if I'm not doing the spiritual thing. And I just loved that connection, because I'm like, oh yeah, I get unloving. I get snippy if I'm not doing my you know, my piety stuff, right? Yeah. But I could still do ministry well. Like, I don't know. So it just gave me some, like, there's some, it's, you know what brackish water is, where, like, the fresh water is meeting the salt water and it makes this mix. It's like, there's a mix here, and people have tried to make it. The Holy Life is either salt water or fresh water. I'm like, I don't know, man. I think it's kind of brackish.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good distinction. I think maybe there's one more aspect that we're not aware of. So what I just want to iterate, that God will still will often use you despite you. Not to spite you, will use you despite you, you know?
He does both. Still,
So that's a real thing that happens, you know? Maybe I failed in prayer, but God doesn't want to punish all the people who are going to listen to my homily, you know?
Right. Yeah, he's not a jerk. It doesn't make him one. Yeah. Right.
Now, a lot of times, you know, I'll preach a homily that people think is amazing, but I feel like a garbage person. I thought the homily was garbage, right? It definitely affects you, you know, that having to do ministry, but know that in your heart you're not with the Lord. Like, that's devastating to a minister. Mm-hmm. And after a certain amount of time, who knows what that is, and then your ministry will collapse, you know. But also one thing, you know, things definitely shine through, and ministry is certainly more fruitful when we are closer to the Lord. Like, there's definitely a real connection there. But sometimes, it's the weird thing with the Holy Spirit. We have, like, fruits of the Spirit. We have, like, we, in general, kind of know the movements of the Spirit, kind of what it does, what it doesn't do. But also, the Spirit doesn't care and does whatever it wants at the same time. There's a popular, like, video series called The Wild Goose. I think it's some, like, Irish interpretation. Like, Yeah, exactly. It's like the Holy Spirit's like a dove, sure. It's also like a wild goose, and it's just going to do whatever the heck it wants, you know? And I think it's important to remember that as well. And sometimes even like, you know, our spiritual lives are healed through our ministry. Like you said, like you preach a talk, all of a sudden you're reconverted, you know? That has happened to me a bunch.
That's how good my talks are. They changed my heart.
You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think absolutely. It's easy to make things black and white. And there's a real truth to solo the apostolate. And it's a helpful thing and it's a good thing. Absolutely. But yeah, once you get into like the nitty gritty of like lived ministry experience, a little more wild goosey, like stuff is a little different. Yeah.
I love how one person was like, the Holy Spirit's like a dove. And I'll be like, I have something so much better than that. Another bird. Very silly.
Listen to me. Have you seen geese? Crazy.
I fed them bread. That's the Holy Spirit. That's yeah. I have a better relationship with geese than I do with doves. So maybe that'll help me out. So I grew up near a pond where I would feed them on the weekly. Aww. So that was going to be the end of our show. But yeah. Two things happened during the recording of this podcast. One of which, I'm just going to give you the opportunity because I know that something else popped into your head. Any last thoughts on the mood?
You know, the pagan people were wrong about, you know, interpreting the signs of the eclipse, right? So but they were right in knowing that something terrible was happening. The eclipse is a terrible thing that happened. And the fact that you're all flocking to it really disturbs me. So there you go. My last moon thing for the day.
Well, good. I didn't know what you were going to say about the moon, but I'm going to use it as a perfect segue into our next topic because you ruined my segue earlier. I think you're being punished because of your rant against the moon. But because before your rant against the moon, you told me and our entire listener base that you dropped a 10-foot weight on your foot, and because you're a man, it didn't break your body. And then you did a rant about the moon. Yeah. And then right after that rant, immediately when it was over, you got a phone call. What did they say?
So the doctor at the MedExpress said, like, hey, I don't see anything wrong here, but we're going to show the radiologist. And then she gives me a call in the middle of our recording. And because my Bluetooth headset is connected to my phone, I picked up and she goes, actually, there's a small fracture on your middle toe. And there's also a small one on your big toe. So you broke your foot. I was like,
This shouldn't be funny. It really shouldn't be funny, but the timing of it makes it hilarious. Like the whole theme of the first segment was because your foot wasn't broken, I felt safe and not completely a jerk in calling you not broken, but therefore an idiot. And now you have proven that you are both by the end of the show. I don't know what to do with this. It shouldn't be funny to me, but it's just great.
You know, the end of the day is I talked to, she's like, if you want, you can come get like a little foot boot thingy. And I was like, how important is that? And she's like, not at all, actually. Basically, you're going to treat it the same way you would have if it wasn't broken. You know, it hurts. Be careful with it. And maybe pick up the x-rays to show your PCP. So it hasn't sunk in yet that I broke my foot by just doing something really stupid. But it's gonna, and I'm going to be sad.
So. This brings me back to one of my favorite memories of you and I together. And I don't understand why. I don't know if it says something about me or something about you or something about our relationship. Maybe one or two or all three of those. Yeah. But one of our most memorable moments together is I called you out of the blue and you had just driven into a ditch. And now you break a bone for the first time in your life? Second time in your life?
Literally the first time I've ever broken.
Literally the first time in your life you break a bone. And it interfered with the recording of this podcast twice, and I'll remember this day forever, fondly. You won't, but I will. That's Clip our it. Friendship. We Clip have it. Memories together that you hate, and I remember fondly.
Lord have mercy. You see, the thing is, I don't hate those I hate those memories, but Taylor, you've brought a little bit of joy into the darkness. Unlike the moon, which brings sadness into the daylight.
So what you're saying is your theme of being a broken idiot rings true, and my theme of my spiritual life falling apart but still being able to minister to you also worked? That's what you're saying?
I guess. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
We did it. That's our show. I'm Taylor Schwall. I'll be back next week. He's Father Anthony, Tony, Scaramucci, Sharapa. He'll be back in a month. See ya! you for listening and watching today. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. At least I had a great time because my foot isn't broken anymore. So if you liked it, you know, share it with somebody. Somebody who needs the joy of Catholicism. Maybe somebody who watches our clips and never our show. Share it with them and say, hey, you should actually watch this or listen to this. Heck, you can even do it at 2x speed and do it in 30 minutes. It'll be great. Y'all have a great week. Love you. Bye.